You can support this show at patreon.com/ASApodcasting. Hello, welcome back, Skyrim Addict Podcast. I'm Michael, joined by Ray.
Hello, hello.
And Victor.
Hello, hello.
And yeah, we're back in Skyrim and some other stuff. We'll get into a little Valheim, a little Hogwarts, a little... we got some feedback from Steve, Skyrim Book Club, we haven't heard from in a while.
That's feedback on steroids.
Yes, so detailed. Like, yeah, this is like old school detailed feedback.
That's excellent.
Yeah. Yeah, kind of reminiscent of what like Dave would save send in McBeta. Yep. Yeah, nice detailed stories and all that. Owie is biting my hand as we speak. So yeah, I've been continuing with my same character, which was the one I was playing. Return to Helgen, not Helgen Reborn, and. You get to that point in the story, it was hard to go through, where you have to team up with the Thalmor and arrest all the people at the shrines. Why can't I think of the name of the shrine? the Shrines of Talos. So you have to go around and round up everybody. And I was like, oh, God, I really don't want to do that. And they're like, well, if you want to be governor, you kind of have to. And I'm like, ugh. So I kind of drudged through that part, and you got to kind of keep progressing. It seems like the three quests, from what I read, it relies on are Dark Brotherhood, main quest, and Civil War. I'm finished the Civil War. So I just have Dark Brotherhood, main quest, and main quest I'm up to where I have to go get the speak to the Jarl of Whiterun and, you know, convince him that capturing a dragon in Dragon's Reach is a good idea. So, haven't had another quest pop up. I did move a couple quests along in Dark Brotherhood, but I just hid in the Night Mother's cabinet and spied on Cicero. So I'm kind of like, you know, whatever. What is that? A third of the way through that, something like that. And picked up the second set of side quests from Nazir. So I think maybe I'll finish those off pretty quick and then see if it advanced any where I can pick up another quest. Because now I'm done with the Thalmor in Helgen and the Panis Oculatus agent, whose name is Mr. Smith, is I'm now in contact with him. So we'll see where it goes from there. I also got to check in and see if maybe I have to talk to the commander's assistant or whatever is another person you get quests from. But I built there's a mine. You can set up a mine in town. Cool. There's a little market, you know, just tents, a little tent market. So, yeah. So I assume I have to, because I think the end result is you can become emperor, so I assume that would be after, spoilers, anybody 11 years down the road. If you continue through Dark Brotherhood, obviously you kill the emperor. So I'm want to kind of play through it to that, so see how it goes. Very lightly modded, mostly graphic stuff, and obviously Return to Helgen, because I wanted it to work, so I didn't want to mess with it too. With it too much, yeah. And have to deal with any kind of issues with it. So it's been going pretty smoothly.
I'll have to look at that. I'm still sorry that this last Skyrim playthrough that I was working on, the Helgen Reborn mod, kind of bugged out on me. Like, stuck almost at the end, though. I mostly finished it, but it was kind of.
I think I've done some of Reborn before. I don't know how that and Return to Helgen differ. Does Reborn build it up a little more?
Well, with Helgen Reborn, there's a sort of a really fully fledged. There's a a total storyline, which somewhat relies on the Civil War.
Okay.
So you have three options with it. You can either play it as taking one side or the other in the Civil War, or not taking sides at all, or not even having started the Civil War. If you haven't triggered the Civil War, you have to go out and recruit a bunch of people to be guards in Helgen. If you have started the Civil War, you either go for Imperial or a Stormcloak, and the story progresses from there, and you free various people. And there's the, I forget what the faction is called. It's the Children of Something, or
I think I did that beginning part and kind of fell off after recruiting people. Yeah.
It's good. It's well written, and the dialogue is great. The voice actors are mostly good, except for the guy who sounds like a sort of a fake Arnold Schwarzenegger. And the rest of it is good. And then you get into this sort of Fight Club section of the storyline. That's where mine sort of bugged out. But you end up with rebuilding the whole town, and you get a player home there, and so on. And then it just sort of stops. So once you're done with that, you're done. And I think it's a great mod. It's old. It goes back to, I don't know, 2013 or something like that.
Around quite a long time.
A long time. Super stable, super good, and just it's a great mod. Anybody who hasn't tried it definitely should. So yeah. Speaking of, you mentioned mines. Have either of you guys tried the Winstead Mine mod? It's the sort of the sister or brother mod to Heliarchan Farm. Same author, but it's the Morthal Hearthfire Home companion mod, like the Heliarchan Farm is companion to. It's really good, actually. There's a whole little tiny quest line, and the mine is next to Ustengrav, or right over there.
That makes sense.
Cool. I've played with that one before. It's very intricate. There's a lot to it.
Hell yes. Yeah, there really is. And it's a great add-on to the house, right? I mean, you can sort of role play it quite nicely. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and it'll make you a lot of money.
Yes.
Mm.
Yeah. Totally.
Yeah. Golden Hills kind of makes you a lot of money too. If you have,
it does, doesn't it? Yeah. Yeah. You stay away for a few days, you come back, and you got 6,000 gold or whatever. Yeah.
I don't know if you get more the more crops and things you set up, and the more farm animals you have, but yeah, I have pretty much everything, and I've planted everything, so I can make potions. So yeah, if I go away for a few days, it's like 3,000 gold or 4,000 gold.
I don't that's a good question. I don't think it matters how many crops you plant. I think it's just as long as you have everybody hired and the steward hired and so on, or whoever the steward happens to be. I think in my last playthrough, that in which I was also doing Helgen Reborn, it was Lydia.
Oh, me too.
By the way, speaking of Lydia, there's a new Lydia extension mod that came out recently, which gives Lydia a whole backstory and everything. Which I knew off the top of my head, because I even if I'm not playing Skyrim, I'm always watching
the mods,
best monthly mods or whatever. Yeah. So there's that one popped up not too long ago on the most recent episode of Zero Period Productions. If anybody watches that YouTube channel, George, I forget his last name, great guy. He's been around for a long time. He's a young guy, but he's been through the ringer. He had cancer a couple of years ago and stuff, but he keeps putting out great content. And this latest one was about this latest Lydia mod.
Yeah. He's very thorough.
Yes. Yeah. I like him a lot. So check that out. That's the only place I can think of to tell people to go look for it. So.
Yeah, I definitely did the beginning of Helgen Reborn now, because I remember what the difference is in the beginnings is it's Return is the patrols, Reborn is you have to recruit the guards or whatever. So I remember doing the recruitment. And I think actually it wasn't the mod itself that went, but there was some other stuff that bugged in the game, which is why I never got to finish it. There was some other things, that other quests that had went bad, and I couldn't finish it, because I think I had gotten past the part of recruiting mostly everybody, and then you move on to that other the children of something you were saying, or
yeah, I forget what the
patch is called. I remember, I vaguely remember that part, but I think that's where my game kind of bugged out, and I couldn't.
Keepers of Hatu, that's what it is.
Oh, okay.
Keepers of Hatu. Yeah,
yeah. I remember it was something, but then my game actually, like whatever I was doing, had kind of bugged out, and I couldn't finish what I was doing. So it wasn't the mod itself. It was probably something else I had done.
Yeah, I'm a little sorry that the mod author was, I don't know where he ended up, Mike Honcho, but there's so much potential now after all these years of more added mods like Bruma and stuff, because a lot of the stuff that goes on with in the background of that Helgen mod came out of Bruma, right? So so it'd be very cool to kind of tie all that together, but it was, oh well. That's where real role playing comes in. You know?
I actually, I haven't played Bruma in quite a while. I guess since did we do it some on a round table maybe or something? Or play it a bit?
Yeah, that's been quite a while.
It's been a while since I played through it. I may have to add it in again after I'm done with the Return to Helgen and kind of play around with Bruma.
Yeah,
I haven't been there.
I recently did a character that I started there.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah, that's right. You were saying that with the
the Ronin
life. Yeah. Is there enough over there starting there? Is it kind of like?
Oh yeah. Once I remembered, where the was it Nightcaller Temple? Mm-hmm. It's the Blades Temple, just above Bruma.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Hills. Yeah.
Yeah.
Not Nightcaller.
My character needed a katana
because
he was a samurai. So, I went up there and got that, and then it made everything else a lot easier.
What is that? Because
you get one enchanted and one unenchanted katana.
Oh, nice!
There, you can also get a bunch of crappy ones, but you just sell those.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, what is that called? Sky Temple or something, or Cloud? Cloud Haven Temple. Is it Cloud Haven?
It's got to be something Haven, right? Because the one in Skyrim is Sky Haven.
Yeah, I think it's Cloud Haven or Cloud something like that.
Yeah, I can't remember.
Yeah, Nightcaller is Dawnstar. That's the one in Dawnstar with the miasma or whatever it is.
The Vermina quest.
Yeah.
So I went ahead and got back into normal form. So I've done like four characters since we started the last show. Excellent. And one of them followed Vermina. So in order to do that, you have to do that quest.
Yeah.
I did it way too early.
Oh, God. Yeah, that is a tough one early on.
Early?
I did a lot of running and very little killing.
Yeah.
Okay. I've sort of been there because I love Erendir, so I have done that quest pretty early a couple of times just to get him as a follower. Yeah.
Well, and you know,
but if you're a Vermina follower, right?
Right. Like, I had to kill him.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's true. Yeah. 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 He's a good follower, too. That's a shame.
Yeah. Really. So how did that play through work out, being giving people bad dreams?
I really love Winter Sun. But some of these are really, really hard to get favor with.
Yes.
Yeah.
So essentially I just went around to everywhere, sneaking into people's houses, in the middle of the night. And then, giving them, deadly dreams.
Oh, God.
And still, I never could get to 100% with Vermina.
Really? Wow.
Yeah. But, it was interesting. So essential characters, their heart stops.
Oh. Wow.
But they don't die.
Oh, that makes sense. Yeah.
But yeah, it was, so I'd go into a town, and if it was daytime, I would just have to wait until nighttime. And then sneak into everybody's house
and give them bad dreams.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to do that playthrough for sure.
That seems. I don't think I've done a lot of Vermina play. I don't know. I mean, it's different for sure.
Well, so if I may be so bold as to manufacture a segue here, it does kind of work into Steven's feedback.
Oh, because, yeah.
So and here's why. So in the first episode of Leo Getz here, so he has taken this to the sort of the nth role playing degree, which he's not the first one to do this, but he has sort of pre-built his character. So he, if you want to call it cheated, but he consoled his skills up and gave himself various things and so to fit who his character was going to be when they entered Skyrim, which I think is a great idea. It takes a lot of thought and a lot of planning, you know? So if you were to do that with, say, the Vermina, what would you do? Not to put you on the spot or anything, but I'm just curious. I mean, if you,
Well, so the character that I did, it was all about sneak and illusion.
Mm-hmm.
So the blessings that you get from Vermina make your illusion spells cost less to cast, and your mind affecting spells work on higher levels based on how many people you've given bad dreams to. And so, yeah, so it was all centered around that.
Yeah.
And I did a similar thing. I did a vampire character, and I didn't want to go through all the trouble of doing vampire stuff. So I cranked everything up and still didn't like vampires.
I totally agree with you.
I agree.
Even in general, I tried playing V Rising with the kids and stuff when they were playing that. I don't like being a vampire. I don't care what game it is. No vampire. Yeah, thank you very much.
Yeah.
It's interesting because he, it's like, it might make for a very targeted and somewhat shorter playthrough. Obviously you're not following all the quests, but,
except that he's going for the Stones of Baron Zion.
Yeah.
Yes, he is.
And there is that. Yeah.
Which naturally drags that whole thing out.
Well, it does and it doesn't, right? I mean, if you know where they all are already,
that's
and
true.
Presumably I don't remember specifically
whether treasure hunter. So,
right. Yeah. He has a map. So I think his character knows where the stones are. I think
that's the idea.
Yeah. So, you do have to do a few things. I think there are only like two or three that are still quest locked. The Thalmor Embassy one got moved.
That got moved into the cave. Early on.
You can get to that by entering the cave.
Yeah.
Right. And the Dark Brotherhood is the one that's
quest
that's
locked.
Quest locked, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then there's the one.
And what about the one that was in the home?
It's still there. Yeah.
Is it in Solitude? Is it?
Yeah.
Yes. The Proudspire Manor. So yeah, you gotta, yeah.
You have to buy Proud because you can't even break in. Yeah. So.
Yeah.
So,
but I mean, So he was obviously saying when he got to, Whiterun, he was like, and here's the one of the obvious problems with pre-building your character up like that. All of a sudden you're in a leveled world, which is very high level, right? So you're getting, and so what did he say? He found, I think in, one spot, I think it was Bleak Falls Barrow, maybe that was in the second episode, but anyway, he found a filled Grand Soul Gen. Nice.
Yeah, which early on in a place like that you don't usually find.
Never find. But yeah, so I guess he found when he first got to Whiterun that everything was, a little more expensive than he had anticipated. So and then he said, "Hey, wait a minute, I'm a master pickpocket."
True.
Went around and pickpocketed everybody.
Make some money.
And ripped off everything he could find. Yeah, so that's pretty cool. I think it's a great It's a great storyline.
Yeah, and I find that, you know, when I am doing one of those, you know, kind of built up characters, you know, there's some skills that I definitely level way up. Pickpocket's one of those, you know, where if you really want those high level perks, it's crazy long to try to do it naturally.
It really is. Yeah.
Yeah. That's the thing. Yeah.
Yeah. That's one of the things I think when we were talking about the Skypothesis, builds that often I find they are so targeted at high level perks that, and it takes so long to get to those that sometimes the playthroughs get a little tedious. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah. I think that's why I like that Ninth Priest so much. 'Cause it really did, you know, the way that they built that was in steps. Mm-hmm. And so it played pretty naturally. I didn't have to do anything, you know, to get that to flow.
Yeah, that's way nicer because then you can experience it as you go rather than just targeting the end goal of it to experience the full character build. Yeah.
So
I also took the character that I had used to do now I can't remember the name of that quest line. It's the one where you go in and you get the Dwemer mask with the summer, winter, fall.
Oh, the visage, the
seasons on something or other.
Season unending, maybe.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
So I took that character. So he was an illusion mage, and it's the one where I used Ordinator. So I had that perk that. You know, the last bad guy standing affected by frenzy takes damage when they're within your imposing
perks. Some of them are like just totally.
Oh, I know.
Oh, yeah.
It's so good.
Yeah.
You know, you cast it on everybody and then you know, then you've got one guy you got to fight. Well, you know what? Not with Ordinator. You just get close. And, you know, it's perfect. Like if you're hiding behind a rock and, you know, he's on the other side of the rock and all of a sudden he's taking damage. Doesn't know why. And then just drops dead. You're
I know, but it's like, I gotta remember. Let's see if that's end of it. And then, wait a minute.
Oh, yeah. Some of them are so, yeah.
So
complex that you can't remember every.
Oh, yeah. I know I can't. I'm just like, you know, I give up on them.
Yeah. And so the character also, I had gone through and gotten the Wabbajack. And that was my offensive weapon, was the Wabbajack.
I think that was my most fun with Winter Sun, by the way, just was being a devotee of Shigarath, because just random shit happens, you know.
Yes, so that's what I did. So I went ahead and you know, used that character and started worshiping Shigarath. And it is so nuts.
Yeah.
The
yeah.
stuff that happens. And so random. So I had, you know, I was going along and, you know, things were working great. You know, I'd you know, I would just get, you know, some weird things and, you know, then I'd get staggered and one time I got, for 30 seconds, I was in God mode.
Oh, nice.
But it was, you know, it's not like you can plan for it.
No.
So I was in the middle of nowhere.
Oh, God.
Had nothing to do. No mountain to jump off of. No, you know.
Hill of Skeever or something.
Yeah.
You know, and so, yeah, so that was a complete waste. One of them was crippling over specialization. So I had 400% damage and crit damage. To cows.
I love it. Which only works in a survival playthrough, right? Or
yeah, if you wanted to stock up on beef.
Yeah. Plenty of steak.
Oh, yeah. Man.
That's great. I love it.
But then out of the blue, so you know, I went from 7% favor to 138% favor.
That's a jump.
And so, you know, now I'm a devotee of Shared Gorath.
Right.
And so now, as soon the next time I entered into, you know, into battle mode, it automatically gave me a new touch of madness.
Oh.
And so this bear comes out from behind a tree and throws me into combat, and I get Whirlwind Tour of Skyrim. Where I just get whisked up into the sky.
Oh my God.
That's awesome.
Just crazy, crazy stuff.
That's very funny.
But I had a character that I think it was a Fudge Muppet character called the Pact Maker. And so that character was a worshiper of Clavicus Vile.
Mm. Oh, I've never done that.
Well, I can't say I would necessarily recommend it.
Oh, God.
So what it is when you pray, instead of, you know, the typical, you know, raising your favor with the deity, you have to enter into a pact. And so, you know, Clavicus Vile gives you something to do, and you have 1 hour to do it. And it's, I couldn't really figure out whose clock we were on.
Oh, yeah.
Because it wasn't a game hour.
Okay.
Huh. And it wasn't a real hour.
Oh.
Because I would, you know, so you, all right. So one of them was read 15 books. Okay. So I fast traveled to the library at the College of Winterhold.
Oh, that makes sense. Yeah.
And that took about 20 minutes off of the timer, even though, you know, it didn't take me 20 minutes to get there.
No, but that, yeah, the fast travel does have a clock. So
Yeah. But it wasn't it was morning when I left and evening when I got there. So definitely that was more than an hour.
It rained all night the day I left. Yeah.
So I ran in and started reading books. But the thing is it doesn't give you any counters.
Oh.
Oh God.
So, and it also doesn't tell you whether it's, you know, 15, you know, new books. Or 15, you know, old books, or, you know, what. And so, man. I just started going through every single book I could get to in the library. But evidently that wasn't good enough.
Oh, no, man.
And if you successfully complete a pact, then you get plus 20% to your favor with Clavicus Vile. If you fail one, you get minus 20%.
Oh, dear.
So then I got advanced 5 perks. And, okay, I can get – I had done the quest where Goshrub gives you a bunch of skill books. So I hadn't read those. So I went in and read those. And that one I got. Okay, great. Okay. Perfect. So then the next one was murder 5 people. And it's not easy to murder people. Because if they, you know, if you get somebody that goes into combat with you, it doesn't count.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's true.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I got that. So then there was another one, mixed 10 poisons. And so I ended up mixing a lot more than 10 because I wasn't sure if it was, if I could make 10 of the same thing or if it had to be 10 different poisons. Because there's no way to know if you've got it done or not until the end of the clock.
Oh, wow.
Okay. Oh, so it doesn't tell you when you
can. And then it tells you, you know, that you, that Clavicus Vile liked what you did and you gained favor. Well, if you didn't do it right, then you lost 20%. So I did 10 different potions, because I figured that way or another, I got 10, but that's not easy to do either. Thankfully, I had a ton of ingredients. Then the next one I got was accumulate 1500 gold worth of new bounty. So I can't go back to Markarth. And then I was in Dawnstar and I got commit 5 assaults. So, you know, that's where you, you know, hit somebody, yeah, but don't kill them. And so, I did that, but then as soon as I got the 5th assault, it immediately switched to commit 5 murders.
Oh no.
So I'm not welcomed in Dawnstar anymore either.
Oh man.
Yeah, some of these are just crazy. So the one I'm still trying to figure out, is how to do a character that works with Parryite. So you gain favor with Parryite by catching as many diseases as you can. You can only pray while diseased.
Oh.
And never accept a cure.
So you need to like go get attacked by wolves, attacked by skeevers.
Yeah.
Right.
Whatever. Yeah.
Where else do
bears.
You get bears? Bears. What do bears give you?
Isn't that bone break?
Bone break fever. Okay. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
So wolves are rock joint.
Yep.
Yep.
Skeevers are.
Skeevers, ataxia.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so I still have a lot more to do on how to make that one work.
Yeah, just don't do it during a survival playthrough. Yeah.
No.
Yeah. And then if you get, does the vampire count as a disease? Getting in the
vampire? Yeah. It probably does.
I would think so.
Until it becomes a lifestyle. Yeah.
Yeah. Then the problem is you can't cure.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'll have to see if I can figure something out for that. Cause that, you know, Parryite's the one that I've only done it, his quest once, just, you know, so that I've done it. But
I like Kesh. Kesh is cool. He's like the,
yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see. So as a follower, you learn all your skills, faster based on your level with Parryite.
Yeah. I mean, the quest reward is one of the best in the game, right? So
is that the Spellbreaker shield?
Spellbreaker, yeah.
Yeah.
And in the vanilla game anyway, it's really good.
Yeah.
Yeah. That and Dawnbreaker are like a pretty potent combination.
Yeah, that's
it. Sword and shield. That was the Gopher, I think, in his first or second big long playthrough, those were his two main.
What was the one I used last? I used the orcish, one of the orcish deities. What the hell was it?
Malakath or something?
Yeah, yeah, Malakath. And I got up to like 168%. But that one didn't feel like it had too many special things going on. I feel like I missed out not doing Shared Goroth.
Yeah, I did Sanguine, and it was kind of anticlimactic.
Yeah. I had done another one. It was one of the Wood Elf, maybe one related to the Wood Elf.
A Jigalag or something? Or
maybe.
Yeah.
But it, like, you couldn't, if you committed a crime, it was an issue or anything like that. So I think I was playing a thief. So when I would break in places, it was kind of an issue because that was breaking the law. So it wasn't really lining up with what I wanted to do. So
I think the hardest one I've ever done is Azura.
Yeah.
because you've got a really small window of time that you can pray to Azura.
Oh, okay. It's one of those. Yeah, where the time limit on where it has to be a certain time of day.
So it's like, you know, between 6 and 7 in the evening only, not in the morning, only the evening.
So you got to have a clock mod so you know when.
And, you know, of course, I'm a notorious fast traveler.
Oh, so you're blown right by it.
So, you just blow right through it.
Yeah, you're not even noticing and you're right through it.
Yeah. So, Azura kicked me out several times.
You haven't been praying. It's been 3 days. Yeah. All I did was travel to Markarth.
They'll pray to Boethia.
Yeah, exactly.
So, but it's another one. It's just so well done.
I liked Winter Sun while I was using it. I wanted to use it with this one, but I wanted to keep it as clean as possible. But there's usually never any issues with that. So
Steven is using Wildcat in his Wildcat.
Yeah. I've used that in the past too. What's the Standing Stone one?
Andromeda.
Yeah. I do like that one as well. I guess we could let's take a listen to Steve's feedback. Mary, remember him. He's been on many times. Also, Skyrim Book Club.
Yeah.
Still alive and well.
Well, hello, Michael, and all my other fellow Skyrim addicts. Steve from Skyrim Book Club here. It's been some time since I've contributed anything to the podcast, and I admit I took a long hiatus from Skyrim, other than from doing my own show, for the last year or so. That said, I've recently got back into the game, and I've been listening to the podcast while I've been doing my playthroughs. I've been enjoying the recent discussions of the Skythiosis builds that you guys have been doing, and I've also found I've really enjoyed going back and listening to some of the lost episodes, really hearing the podcast in the early days. And one of the things that I often enjoyed was the contributions that people were making, talking about their characters, their builds, their approach to the game, and so on. And I've recently started a new character that I've been enjoying quite a bit, so I thought I'd dive in, add my story, add my tale, and record a little bit of my own feedback. So the character I'm about to talk about was inspired by two things, really. Number one was a lost episode, I believe, where you were discussing what your favorite quest line in the game was. And I stopped and thought about that, and I realized I've put a lot of time into Skyrim. I mean, maybe 1,500 hours or something by now. Not massive, but considerable. And I've completed very few quest lines. As we've talked about before, I've always treated Skyrim as a sandbox and like a character creation delivery device. I've completed a few quest lines, but nothing major. So I started to think about what quests I would want to do. Which ones have I picked up, but never finished, and would like to take another run at? And one of the first ones that came to mind was No Stone Unturned. I think we all accidentally find one or two of these unusual gems at some point. You get the prompt to take it to an appraiser, but speaking personally, I never got into that. I knew by the time I'd started playing Skyrim that there were like 24 of these things. It was going to take you all over Hell's Half Acre and back again. And it just didn't seem like a quest line I wanted to go down. You know, I was always busy doing something else. So I started asking myself, what kind of character would do that? What kind of person in Skyrim would spend all that time, go to all those great lengths, all those different places, in order to collect these ancient stones from a dead queen's crown, and just to put them all back together again? And the answer that came to mind is a treasure hunter extraordinaire. So, with that small inspiration in mind, I booted up the computer, opened up my default level 1 start character, opened up the dev console, because I'm a dirty PC cheater, and I got down to work. But I needed a theme before I started goofing around and padding skills and so on and so forth. So the second thing that inspired me was an old playthrough that Michael did on his YouTube channel where you played a pacifist. And I thought that was very interesting because I don't want this treasure hunter to just be any other adventurer, any other bandit who like goes in, kills everybody, robs everything, happens to find the thing that they were supposed to find, goes back to their patron and gets paid. I really like the idea that my character would view themselves as a treasure hunter, a man who knows how to get things, perhaps at times a thief, but never a murderer. He does it for the thrill of the hunt, the chance to venture into strange places, and for the love of all things that glitter. Now, if you contract his services and along the way a few loose items fall into his pockets, that's just a finder's fee after all, isn't it? So putting those two things together, a long and involved questline that I wanted to do that I thought would be very interesting, and a play style that I've borrowed from something I've seen other people do. I sat down and I got to work on my guy. So I named my man Leo Getz. Props to people who can name the movie that comes from. Plan number one. What race are we going to be? Well, I chose an Imperium. It seemed thematically appropriate because that gold-finding boost seemed like exactly the kind of skill that an experienced treasure hunter would have. And, mechanically, the Voice of the Emperor ability goes very well with the concept of a pacifist playthrough. I think no matter how hard you try, eventually, someone's going to catch you sneaking, or they're going to catch you with, you know, your hand in their pocket, and that is going to be clutch. That ability to just smash the Q button, calm everybody down, and run away is going to be fabulous. So, we went with an Imperial. In terms of skills, I wanted lockpicking, pickpocketing, sneak, illusion, alchemy, and light armor. I had some very specific reasons for all of these things. Light armor is basically in case things go bad. This is my insurance policy. This is my, you know, health plan, if you will. Lockpicking. Number one, I've never gone down the lockpicking tree. Ever. Ever. We all just stick the pick in, we wiggle it, blah, 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 no matter what the difficulty of the thing. I imagine we all ignore the lockpicking tree. However, when I started looking at it, it's actually got some pretty interesting things that are going to go well with this character. Pickpocketing makes a certain amount of sense because you're going to need to get keys off of people. You may need to get other items. And having watched the pacifist playthrough, that ability to put a paralysis poison into somebody's inventory and freeze them. If it's an enemy that you have to get by, or you just, they're too strong. They're spotting your stealth constantly, etc., etc. So pickpocketing we went with. Obviously stealth, we're going to want to be sneaky if we're going to be going around trying to be peaceful. Illusion for all of the various control spells, and then alchemy, largely to prop up this idea of pickpocketing and potioning. Now, in order to build this guy the way that I wanted to, I did the math and I needed 53 perk points. Using the console commands to advance your skill, I was able to get light armor, lockpicking, pickpocketing, sneak, illusion, and alchemy all up to 100, but I came up about 5 or 6 points short. So I went in and I cheated up speech and enchanting. I didn't invest in either one of those, but again, they seem thematic. I figure a treasure hunter probably has some interesting knowledge about enchanted items at this point, if only to appraise them properly for sale. And you're obviously spending a lot of time fencing a lot of stuff, so having a good speech skill seemed appropriate as well. Now, I'll pause for a second before I go into how I divided those perks to make an argument for why I'm designing this character. I mean, mechanically, it's because I want to try to play a fully formed treasure hunting type character and experiment with a playstyle without having to grind my way up to having the ability to now start playing the character that I wanted. However, the other reason is, from a backstory point of view, that the reason that this guy, Leo Getz, finds himself in the wagon next to a horse thief and Ulfric Stormcloak is that he is known throughout the Empire as an expert treasure hunter. He is known as a man who can get you things. And the reason that he was caught trying to cross the border with Ulfric Stormcloak is because they had come to him in order to try and hire him to get the Jagged Crown, which, as everyone knows, is the first major quest that you do in the Civil War questline. So my theory was that while Ulfric maybe had the ability to commit troops, he was looking for someone to do it solo. That's where Leo Getz comes in. They went across the border. They made a deal. They get caught coming back. Everybody gets thrown in a wagon. Yada, yada. Dragons. You know the rest. That's my kind of story reason for why Leo comes fully formed, and why, as an Imperial, he kind of finds himself in Skyrim, freelancing about the land. So to go through quickly the mechanics of how I built this guy, in light armor, I gave him all 5 of the Agile Defender points, and I put 1 into Custom Fit, just to max out his light armor. I wasn't interested in anything else. I just, if he gets hit, I want him to be able to survive. Lockpicking. I took all 5 of the lock perks, right from Novice all the way up to Master Lock. I took Quick Hands, because that gives you the ability to pick locks silently. So if I'm stealthed in a room trying to open a chest and there's a guard walking around, he won't hear me messing with the lock, which I thought was very thematic again. Golden Touch is extra gold. Treasure Hunter, I mean, come on, it's in the character build name, but also increases the chance of enchanted item drops. Locksmith is fantastic. I've enjoyed it so much in the first couple hours playing this guy. It starts the lock pick right near the optimum spot to open it. Anything I've discovered, anything under expert, it's spot on. And for expert and master, you only have to move the lock about 1/2 inch one way or the other to get the sweet spot. and the last one was Unbreakable. So I've literally been running around Skyrim picking every lock I can find with one lockpick. Fabulous. Pickpocketing, I went with all five of the light fingers to get my chance to pickpocket up 100%. Took Night Thief because you have to. Took Poisoned so that I could drop poisons into people's inventory. And then I went Cut Purse and Misdirection. Because, again, having watched Michael play as Pacifist, I realized that there are going to be enemies from time to time you're going to have to kill. It's going to be just like a quest bottleneck or something. Or there's going to be random events like happened to me today that are going to force you to have to fight somebody. So that ability from Misdirection to disarm their equipped gear, fantastic. It also led to a cheeky little exploit. When some hired thugs were sent to fight me, and I went about the business of disarming them before I started to fight with them, they were respawning new weapons. So I just kept casting invisibility, crouching, and just farmed them for expensive weapons for about 20 minutes. It was fabulous. Back to perks then. Sneak, pretty straightforward. I took all five in stealth, and I really just ran up the left side of the tree. Muffled movement, light foot, silent roll, and silence. At some point, if I get an extra perk point from leveling up some other skill accidentally, I might take the Shadow Warrior one, but I'm happy having got to silence. Illusion. I took the novice to expert perks. Dual casting, hypnotic gaze, aspect of terror, animage, kindred spirit, and here another clutch one for me, quiet casting, which will play into the character very well, I think, and then master of the mind so that your illusion spells work on everybody. This is really going to be the centerpiece of the character. This is how I'm going to navigate the world. We're going to be muffling, we're going to be pacifying, aspect of terror to get, you know, all manner of people that have aggroed me to go away, so on and so forth. I think this is really going to be the bread and butter of the character. And then with alchemy, I took all five alchemist perks to increase the potency of my things, took physician because I have to, and then poisoner to make stronger poisons, and I stopped there because that's all I really want to do. In terms of attributes, I went almost entirely magicka. Understanding that I was going to be a fairly high-level character by the time I had finished building this guy, which would mean the world would be fairly high-leveled, I ran my health up to 200 exactly. All the remaining points went into magicka, so I'm floating about 530, I would say, something like that, 530, 550, and that's been working fairly well. I've got a really nice deep magicka pool, and when I do get popped by somebody, I'm not going to get one shot. That matters in particular because, and Victor will appreciate this, I loaded Yunai Sion's Wildcat Combat mod. This is fantastic. I absolutely love it, but it can get nasty fast. So we went, so we'll say 90% magicka, 10% health, and I'm quite happy with the way that shook out. Now, in terms of spells, I'm really trying to be a minimalist here. You get flames to start the game, you pick up that Sparks spellbook in the Helgen run, and other than that, I only took 6 spells. I have Paralyze, Invisibility, Pacify, Rout, Muffle, and Fast Healing because of the aforementioned Wildcat. I'm keeping my eye out in particular for ingredients that make paralysis potions or invisibility potions. But this is it. This is really the way I want to play the guy. I really want to minimize. I don't want to have 85 options. I want to be really good, one play style. These, I think, are the spells and potions that'll prop that up. I really want to try and master a small set of skills and see how well I can use them. In terms of Standing Stone, I went with the Lord Stone. You know, the 50 points of armor, 25% magic resistance, seemed like good baseline, always on sort of passive bonuses. In part I did this because while there are other stones that might more thematically fit the character, I can really already do all the things that they would give you because, you know, I've cheated and I've given this guy like 106 skills. Now, anybody else who was playing, a treasure hunter, I can certainly see why there would be other options that you might want to take, but that's where I landed. So then in terms of playstyle, as I've been kind of hinting at, my approach to the game is largely going to be that of a pacifist. The idea is to sneak in, acquire the target item for the client. Any loot found along the way is mine and it's nobody's business. Going to make really extensive use of sneak skills, illusion spells, and that pickpocketing skill to disarm or to paralyze enemies that I have to deal with. Now, there is going to be that odd spot where I am required to kill. In order to get through some of the spots in the Baron Zayas quest, for example, you have to follow other quest lines. I'm going to have to get into the Thalmor Embassy in some way, which means I'll have to run the main quest to a certain point. This means, at the very least, having to kill that Draugr in Bleak Falls Barrow to get to Dragonstone. I mean, maybe I could pickpocket him. Ooh, I'll report back on that. And I imagine that when you go into Under Sarthal for the Winterhold College quest line, I'm going to have to kill Yairik Galderson or something. Anyways, one of those three sons, you have to kill that guy while Tolfdir is like shooting lightning at the giant orb. So I am going to have to be able to kill somebody at some point, right? And I thought about that for a little bit because I didn't really want to invest in his, you know, combat skills. I really want to stick with this pacifist idea. But since he's majority mage, and since he was born, if you will, with flames and sparks, I am literally going to do that. I've invested no points in destruction. On the very rare occasion that I can't find some other way to deal with someone who's aggressive with me, I'm going to fall back on like level one fire and or sparks. And we're just going to see what happens. We're going to have fun with that. There may be a lot of reloading, but that's the way that I'm going to approach it. So there's sort of the mechanics of the guy. What are his motivations now? Well, in terms of quests, I'm going to do three things. We talked about no stone unturned. That's the meat and potatoes. That's what I'm going to build this playthrough around. Also, there are 10 treasure maps in Skyrim. We all probably find one or two of them accidentally along the way. But I thought it would be really interesting to purposefully seek out all those treasure maps, go and find the treasure, and then, like, you know, record what you get for it, right? And then last but not least, since I'm a book nerd, and I've long had a friendship with Urag Groshub, I know that he will give you a Fetch Me That Book quest, which is Radiant. So for as long as I'm enjoying playing this character, I can always go back to Urag, get a quest to go find a book, end up in some random dungeon, have a little bit of fun, find the appropriate treasure for my client, and make a little bit of bank along the way. So that was my idea. Now, how did my first play session go? Well, it was interesting. I'll put it that way. Once I had popped all of his skills, I figured the first thing that I was going to want to do was get myself to Whiterun, a respectable-sized town, and get some new gear. Because really, all I've got at this point is the basic low-level junk that you pick up going through the Helgen dungeon. And that is not going to stand up to the kind of enemies I'm going to be finding as now a level 53 character playing Wildcat combat. So I follow Railoff, get to the Guardian Stones, jump in the river, and just swim my way to Whiterun. I want no business with anybody, no aggro, no nothing, right? I get into town, I start to talk to Adriana Avenici, and even after selling off all the Imperial armor and whatever I'd picked up in Helgen, I have maybe 1,200 bucks. But of course, everything that she's selling to me is leveled, right? So I'm looking at glass armor for $1,800, $800 enchanted gloves, and so on and so forth, right? And I'm like, well, I didn't anticipate this, man. Like, God, I don't really have any money. And then a light switch goes on in my brain. Wait a minute, bud. You are a master pickpocket. So I quick save my game and proceed to go all around Whiterun, robbing every shopkeeper, the annoying NPCs, you all know who I'm talking about, and I cleaned out the home of both the Battleborn and Greymane clans, who, by the way, are not as rich as they would like you to think, let me tell you. I proceeded to sell all of my ill-gotten gains to my summonable emergency merchant. I have been playing with this mod for like 5 years. I found it first in a Steam Workshop. It's available through Nexus and anywhere else that you get your mods, of course, as well. Love this. You summon basically like, I don't know, a Daedric merchant. She will buy anything from you. So I'm bending the rules here, but I immediately had access to like a Daedric fence, which again, I thought was pretty thematic. This idea that like nobody gets to be a top tier Tamriel renowned treasure hunter without having solved these basic problems. I am not a level one dude trying to figure out how to sell a bunch of stolen cheese wheels to Bellathor in Whiterun, right? Like, I've gotten beyond that. So, again, little cheaty, but we took advantage of that. So I have now, like, $9,000 in my pocket. This is absolutely fabulous. Perfect. Plan two. Let's start the Baron Zaya Stones. Three of them are quite conveniently located in Whiterun. I go into the Temple of Arkay, which has the tomb. The old blind guy in there wants you to go find his necklace. In the tomb, which is very small, one of the Stones of Baron's Eye is sitting there, bottom left, in like the center aisle. So, I crouch, cast my invisibility, walk right past the skeletons, pick up the first stone, easy peasy, lemon squeezy. The next one is in Yorvaskar. It's in Khodlak Greymane's quarters. So I walk through the door, and where all these dummies are gathered around watching those two people have the fight, which is the introductory scene when you first walk in there. Number one, I try to pickpocket all of them, and man, these people have nothing. Nothing. A Skyforged weapon and little else. So I quickly make my way down into the living quarters, rob everybody, loot everything, have a great time opening all the display cases, taking like elven level weapons at this point, which turns out to be pretty good money. I basically stole everything but the Tupperware, you know, And there were some fantastically funny moments, though, where, like, I would be right in front of a person and they would see me. Oh, geez, I better stop stealing. And I would back away like 3 feet. And you feel like a slave in Roman times, right? Like, as soon as you're out of line of sight, like, you stop existing. You know, like, this high-level stealth is fantastically funny. But if you're trying to convince me that the companions are, you know, the special forces of Whiterun, they really need to work on their perception checks, I'm just going to say. But, again, easy peasy, into Codlac, White Mane's quarters, pick up the gem, no problem. I sneak my way into Dragonreach to get the last one, which is in the Jarl's quarters. I manage to stealth and invisibility my way right past Irleth. She calls out to me, but she can't really spot me, so I get into the quarters before I kind of get forced into the conversation with the Jarl. I rinse and repeat my experience in Yorvaskar. Just go through all the rooms, clear out anything of reasonable value, take all the loose coin, gems, jewelry, all this kind of thing. I rob every guard in the joint, which is fantastic. And the only one who made me that whole time was one of his snotty little kids. I don't remember which one it was, but my goodness, that kid almost got himself a poison reverse pickpocketed. I know you can't kill children, but if I can make him sick for a day or two, teach him a lesson. But anyways, again, taking advantage of the playstyle that I've watched Michael do, very simple. I didn't even have to pacify anybody. The stealth and the invisibility really combined to just make these guards look like children. I wouldn't say that it was too easy because it was time consuming. And you have to be thoughtful in how you're going to approach this. You have to think about lines of sight. You have to, like, enter a room in a different fashion and so on and so forth. But anyways, that was a lot of fun. And I quickly got out of there. Although, as I was walking around the second floor, having exited the Jarl's quarters, that's where Irleth finally catches me. But I am determined not to start the main quest anytime soon. So, despite her telling me to come talk to the Jarl, I basically just went to the end of one of the balconies. I took a great big jump off of the edge and ran right out the front door of Dragon's Reach before the Jarl could grab me and start shoving me down the main quest line. So at that point, all I had left to do was to collect the first treasure map. So at this point, I've got all my spells, I've sold a bunch of stuff, I've bought some decent gear, I've got some elven armor with a health boost, I've got glass boots, I've got just leather gloves at this point. I have a Whiterun guard's helmet because a vampire killed him while I was running around doing stuff. So I thought that was a bit cheeky, I would enjoy wearing that. But again, I've got all light armor, that's what matters for my perks. Ready to rip, I load up Pacify and Route, and I get out on the road. Very easy getting back to Riverwood. I did get approached by a couple of wolves, but man, Route does the job. No problem. One pop, they run for miles, never see them again. I walk 10 feet down the road, I squat into my stealth stance, I vanish, combat's over. And I continue to make my way to that unmarked bandit camp where the first treasure map is found. But along the way, I start to encounter my first problem with being a pacifist. A cultist of Boethia, again, because of my level no doubt, has decided they're going to show up and attack me. Well, I don't want to have any of this. I don't know this guy. I don't want to get into some battle on the side of the road. Not interested. So I run, like the greedy coward that I am, squat, cast invisibility, and he loses track of me. I take this opportunity to get up to him, do my pickpocketing magic, take his weapon, his money, his armor, whatever items he was wearing, you know, blah, 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 clean him out. And then I just leave. I figure if I can get far enough away from him, you know, the problem's solved. There will be no aggro. No big deal, right? And that turns out to be mostly true. I get to the bandit camp, and there is a man dressed all in ebony, standing sort of at the little entrance that goes up to the camp. And at first I'm thinking, like, is that the ebony warrior? Because I've never done whatever quest it takes to go find the ebony warrior, and I have no idea how that character appears in the world. But I get a little closer and figure out it's just a mercenary. Now, I'm playing with immersive patrols and some other mods, so maybe that's why he's so well-geared. Maybe it's just like a leveled character, so he's geared relative to my level. Who knows? All ebony armor. So, you know, I crouch down and I check him out and I take a magic item or two, but generally leave the guy alone. Well, this turns out to be a pretty smart plan, because my idea was I'm going to go up into this bandit camp and I'm just going to pickpocket the map. I don't need to fight these people. I just want the treasure map so I can open it and I can run back down to that log next to Riverwood, get my loot. Well, that sort of works. I get up there. I try to pickpocket the first guy. Doesn't have it. No big deal. I back out without taking anything, no problem. I go to the second bandit. Doesn't have the map. Well, as I'm backing out, my invisibility goes off. And all of a sudden, I'm visible, and they can see me. I'm like, oh my god, this is no good. So, I run again, crouch, invisibility, circle around, try to get rid of the aggro. I'm thinking, well, how am I going to deal with this? I mean, I guess I'm down to like one last guard. So I know who it's going to be. I know which bandit, I should say, is going to have this map. I'm like, but I don't really want to deal with any kind of aggro. So I'm waiting for things to calm down. And all of a sudden, out of the blue, the cultist of Boethia comes roaring up towards the camp, shouting whatever pre-generated line it is that they have, and everybody goes off. He aggros everyone all at the same time. So the mercenary gets involved. The bandits that I was previously trying to sneak around run down the ramp towards the road, start fighting this cultist of Boethia, right? Everybody's swinging their weapons and blah, 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 blah. And then for whatever reason, it just continues after they kill this guy. There's two bandits left, but at this point, this mercenary is going full hog. I don't know if he got hit by friendly fire or something during the fight, but he's decided that's it, that's enough. I'm killing all these bandits too. So he wipes everybody out, solves all of my problems. I stand up and look at him. He heals himself and walks down the road. Doesn't want anything to do with me. So I go in there and I just strip mine everybody. Clean out the bandits, take the magic robes, get my map. I did not have to kill anyone. Leo Getz is not a murderer. If people happen to be murdered around him, well, that's just the way she goes sometimes, isn't it? So, pop the map, run down to the tree, and I open up the treasure chest, and I find the following six items. Copper and onyx circlet, ebony ingot, flawless emerald, 119 bucks, and a petty soul gem that's empty. Not bad for the first treasure. So I see I've been running about a half an hour now, and that's also a good place to stop down. That was the end of my first play session with the sky. So I just want to say again how much I've been enjoying listening to the show, catching up to the show, diving back into Skyrim. Thank you for everything that you've been doing, both old and new. Really, really liking it. And thank you for inspiring me to kind of do something I'd never done before in the game, play in a way I'd never played in the game. I think I'm going to have an absolutely fantastic time. And if this first one doesn't end up on the cutting room floor because of how long-winded I am, maybe I'll send you another one and we'll see how he does with, you know, map two and say the next couple of Baron Zaya stones. Once again, thank you very much, Michael, Victor, and everybody else that participates. I hope you all have a wonderful day. And as Andrew likes to say, happy Skyrimming.
All right. Thank you, Steve. Hopefully we'll hear you on here soon. Say he might hop on when he gets a chance.
Yeah, I'd love to hear him. I mean, I'd love to ask some questions and hear you know, current stuff about the character.
Yeah, because he does such detailed stuff. We have a few more feedback things from him already. He set up a little folder for me to hop into to grab them. But yeah, it's his like kind of it's funny because he had talked about this a couple years ago when he was on, about how he really hasn't finished many of the quests and he's just more of a sandbox player and all that. And like you were saying earlier, he, you know, basically set up this character to do X, Y, and Z. And
yeah, he's a treasure hunter. Yeah. So
yeah.
A pacifist treasure hunter.
Yes, the pacifist part. Yes, interesting. Always interesting to play through Skyrim as a pacifist.
Yeah.
With illusion, that's very helpful. You can do it with illusion. Once you get really powerful in illusion,
and you can do it without, you know, the combat part too. If you just, you know, just calm and
fear is run away. Yeah. If you do that, if you have those and
invisibility,
invisibility is key. Yeah, if you have invisibility, you can really get through a lot of places as a pacifist without having to deal with anything.
Well, you have to have a really, really high level of sneak.
At that point, yeah, you got to be pretty high up.
Yeah, you know, and going through all these characters, one of the things I found myself doing constantly is, you know, one of the first things I do is head to Embershard Mine. And it was something that Major Slack did in one of his videos. So you go in there and you grab all the torches going down to the two guys that are standing by the water at that first bridge. You collect all those torches, then you go hide behind the cart that's sitting up there and start launching arrows to the opposite end of the hallway there. And they get all aggroed and go running around. Where that, you know, what was that noise? And then they calm down and you shoot another one and they run around and they calm down. And you shoot another one. So no matter where I'm at with sneak, you know, my character can be level 30 right off the bat. And the thing is, you never have to kill him.
Yeah, you just you have to wait for the eye to basically close, and that, yep. that yep. will that's when it levels.
Yep. Starts, yeah, that's when it all.
Yeah, and that's when you shoot your next arrow, and they run around. And even if they come running up, you know, if you get a little too aggressive and your arrows are too close to them, they'll come run up towards where you're at. But very, very rarely have I ever had them actually find me behind that cart.
Huh.
And so you, then you just wait, let them go all the way back down, then start shooting again.
Yeah.
But even if I'm not playing a sneaky character, it's nice to have a little, you know, sneak under your belt.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, with yeah. without having to go up to Dragon Search and hide up, you know, get up there on the balcony and go into a continuous walk and leave your character there while you watch TV.
Yeah.
It always feels better when it's a little more interactive.
Yeah, when you're actually doing something. Yeah, that's true. Yeah. That's fair. Or like yeah. if you're playing with the typical vanilla start and you just pin yourself up against the wall in the bear cave at the end and just walk into the wall for whatever, 4 hours. The problem is then you get out of there and you're 100 sneak and then you're a higher level and many other things can go bad for you at that
yes,
point.
Yes, many things can go bad. Yeah. Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
When you unintentionally level one thing way higher than you realize, then it becomes it can become an issue. Let's see. I mean, other than Skyrim, I've been playing Valheim.
Yay.
And I've hit the point now where I want to just keep playing.
Good.
So
that's
been
a great game.
I've been in a just playing in a blank world that I started, and then I had a couple friends that started one when it came on Xbox as well, so we all kind of played it together, but they've kind of advanced too far, so I try not to go in there very much because I kind of want to gain the experience before I
yeah that's one of the reasons yeah. I mean, you're welcome in on our server, but that's one of the reasons why I said it. You need to sort of, and this of course as you probably realize is one of the beauties of Valheim is how portable your characters are.
It's amazing.
And all their inventory that they have on their person will go with them wherever you go. So I can bring my original Balgruuf character, who's got, you know, the padded armor, the best armor in the game, and all the other crap into somebody else. But when you're low level and that's your only character and you go into a world where, say, you know, the inhabitants of that world have beaten the Ekthyr boss and the Elder boss and the Bone Mass. The biggest problem with that is it's not so much that the world, that the enemies, the individual enemies aren't leveled, but the mobs that attack you when you're in, you're trying to build a settlement and stuff are much higher level. So
I ran into that issue. Yes. Yeah. So all three of us had taken down Ekthyr, but I think one of us had taken down the Elder. Is that the next one? I believe.
Yes.
And so then these mobs started spawning, like, you know, it's there's a rustling in the woods at night. And then there's like 15, whatever.
Where the ground is shaking and you get two trolls.
Yeah.
And there's a tree. Those guys are deadly. Even when you're high level, they're deadly.
Yeah. The trolls are tough. I got wiped out. I did my first sailing expedition. I built a raft. And I was like, I'm going to go sail around the other side of the island here because I found a tin deposit and I'm going to go sail there and sail back. Well, I'm on the stupid raft. I get down there and a massive storm hits. I get washed up on the rocks right next to a troll. And I'm like, man. I'm like,
how you doing?
Yeah. And it was hard enough figuring out how to sail as it was because, like, the prevailing wind matters and all this kind of stuff. So you know, if it's not with you, you're not going real fast. So it's like, so I died down there, obviously. But the nice thing is, you get all your stuff is with your character in perpetuity. Like, you go to the gravestone, pick up all the stuff, and It's just there.
You can get back there.
Well, that's true. Right. This was close.
Try dying on the mountain sometime.
Yeah, that's true. This was close enough where I could just run across the map and get it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I actually came across one of my first ones that I died in the forest.
yeah.
And I was like, oh. And I was like, oh, there's a lot of stuff on this one. I was like, but I don't really need it anymore. Because I've just gotten to the point where I'm making bronze and kind of upgrading to that stuff. So
yeah, I remember one of my first playthroughs. I was like, it was the first time I'd come near the plains. I was on a boat, not a raft, but the boat,
which is
the next level up. And I was like, oh yeah, I got this. There was a death mosquito that came flying around, and I had my back to the land, and the boat was sort of floating, and I had got my bow out, and I killed that damn death mosquito, and I was triumphant, and I turned around, and there was a fueling, and it was dead. And so everything I had was floating in the water, and I couldn't get back. So basically I just said, okay. So I sort of kind of started over. And as you say, eventually later on, I came back and I didn't need any of that crap anymore.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Yeah. Like in the world, the server we have set up together, there's a smelter and stuff that everybody uses and all. So I haven't built one in mine yet. So I just go back and, like you said, you carry the stuff on your character.
Yeah.
I just do, if I do any mining in my world right now, in my solo world, I'm just kind of building a house and setting up a camp now that I'm like, I feel like I know what I'm doing enough to set up a real area of how I want it. You know, I've kind of experimented enough with how to build and where to build and things like that, that I kind of have an idea. Smoke is still a minor issue. I'm starting to figure that out though, but I watched.
Yeah, that's a sort of a well-known sort of quote, you know, air quotes cheat is, you know, if you can't take ore through a portal.
Yeah.
However, you can load yourself up with 2,000 pounds of ore and then just, you know, quit, enter into your other world where you're right next to where you left yourself right next to one of your smelters.
Yes. And then smelt everything. Yeah.
Yeah. It's all good. Right. So that works.
Yeah. It is interesting how you can do that.
Yeah.
It is helpful though. Like I'm not bringing a lot back and forth because other people have been in the one, like there's a lot of areas that have already been mined that would be close. And I'm like, oh, so let me establish my world again. Now that I got a little experience and I know how I want to set up a camp and build walls and all that stuff. Yeah. And
well, sometime you come over, visit.
Yeah.
We started this one. We had a server over a year ago and Ray was there a few times and we played that for a while and we sort of all kind of drifted off and doing other things. And even Colin was there once or twice.
Nice.
Yeah. And so then I let that one go and I started this newest one up when Mistlands came out and we all played it for a while and we were like, yeah, we got to start from scratch and build up. And then we just sort of all got bored and went over and did other things. I think the only one, of course, the only one who's played through it all is Sean. and he's done, all of Mistlands. But Mistlands is really beautiful. It's great. It's tough. It's tough enough as the next level, you know, biome. It's really quite something. It was so hard that they actually nerfed a little bit of it. After a few weeks. Yeah. They and then of course they were all, oh, it's too easy now. Blah, blah, blah. but that's another story. But I really honestly think it's one of those games that's just a sort of a little mini masterpiece. They hit the mark on so many things, and all of that stuff where when people found exploits, they didn't nerf them, they didn't change them. They said, "Oh, it's tactics, And this is something this is one of these things that I get very uppity about on YouTube comment threads and stuff. You know, it's not a cheat. It's not cheesing. It's a tactic. A tactic is a tactic. If you figure out a way to make something work that works for you, that's a tactic. You wouldn't find any soldier who would say, oh, well, I'm not going to do that because it's not, you know, that's a dead soldier, right? So, anyway, there's lots of really great tactics in Valheim.
Yeah, I'm really enjoying it. Like in the beginning, it was tough because it's hard. It kind of leaves you. You're kind of just there to figure, you know, just figure it out kind of as you go.
Yeah.
But I started to kind of get a rhythm with it once because I didn't really. I was only playing like half hour, 45 minutes at a time, and that's like no way to really get a rhythm in that game because you're spending so much time making sure you're in a safe place to save and come back. So I kind of started to get the first raid I experienced that was pretty low level. All I had was a knife and I got wiped out pretty quickly. But the second one, all I had was a knife again, but I was higher level and I kind of knew how to run around and like attack and leave and run and attack, leave, you know. So I was able to wipe out like what are they graybacks or something like that they're called, or
graylings,
that's it.
Yeah.
So
and gray dwarves, yeah.
There was like 10 of them and I'm just running around the woods using trees to deflect them and taking one at a time and running and running and running and running. And I'm like, they're banging down my wall and I'm like, no, don't destroy this. I just built it. Let me go out in the woods. I'll fight you out there.
Yeah.
Get out of my camp. I want to stay safe in here. So
yeah, I find building trenches is the best way to keep your village relatively safe. A good deep trench.
Yeah, yeah. Because I have the pick now. Well, here's the thing, because in the server, I couldn't hang Ikethyr because somebody else already had. So I didn't see an option to be able to do it. So I went to my world and I was able to do it there.
Oh yeah, you can, but you can still activate the power.
Yeah, yeah,
So, but yeah, it's. And you can activate it in either world, I think.
So I hung the trophy at the starting circle there in my world, since there was one already at the other one. So
I kill lots of Ikthyrs so I can hang them in my lodges because he's a great
it's a good looking
down over the glowing red eyes and says stuff,
Oh, that's right. It talks to you, I've heard. Yeah.
And the bone mass trophy now is not anything like the original was. The original was sort of just kind of dull, and then they patched it, I don't know, a few months after the game came out, and it's all animated now. It's all kind of gooey and stuff. It's really but they've added, and they added a lot of things intermediately. So in the swamp, the abominations were added later. Those weren't original to the swamps. And the Fenrigs and Fenris stuff that's in, and the ice caves that are in the mountains were added later. Those weren't original to the mountains. So, and I'm assuming they're going to continue to do stuff like that. They keep adding little things as the game goes along. They've been very actively, keeping it, fresh and new. Not much to report about Hogwarts. I'm still playing. I have two fairly high level characters. I still haven't finished the game. It has its issues, but the only thing that I'd like to comment on slightly about Hogwarts right now is just how interesting it is to play a game that has a really great combat, but no melee at all.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. It's all magic. It's beautifully done. It's just really, really skillfully designed, I think.
That's true, because in that world there is no real melee combat.
Yeah, no.
Yeah.
No swords, no shields, no knives, no daggers, no nothing. And I think that's really great. That's not quite 100% true, because you have vegetables. You have the Chinese chomping cabbages that you can throw at enemies, and they make these wonderful comments about, I'm not going to die to a vegetable. Stuff like that. And the venomous tentacular plants, which are basically, Venus flytrap kind of things. So you do have that, but it's still kind of magic of a sort.
Yeah. They're more magical than they are.
Yes.
Blunt plant objects.
Yeah. Anyway, it's great. So I'm still enjoying it.
Ray, what you up to?
So they just dropped the new update to No Man's Sky.
Oh.
6 weeks after the last one.
Oh, yeah.
Wow. That's fast.
Yeah, it was incredibly fast, but it added a new ship type and new enemies. So definitely they're up in the combat game. You know, you can still choose to play it as a chill game and just avoid these things altogether.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're looking for a little more action, they definitely added it with this new update. Cool new ships, super cool. They're called Sentinel ships, and they're a lot of animation to them. You know, stuff kind of like a Transformer, just kind of expands out and
oh, wow.
And everything. But it's just amazing how much they keep adding to this game.
It really is. I mean, because I bought it like day one, and just the amount that they continue to do is unreal, you know?
Yeah, agreed. Yeah. I haven't gone back to it much, but I've always kept tabs on it. It really is quite something. Yeah.
Yeah, because it's like a shame how it kind of got tarnished with this whatever in the beginning, because there's just so much to it now. It's like, you know, just so huge at this point. I mean, it probably gets more updates than like
I can't think of any other game that gets as many as this.
Yeah, there's nothing I can think of that like expands the way this does. It's like,
because they've been, you know, the last few years they've averaged 4 to 6 updates annually.
Oh wow!
Is there any modding in the game? Is there?
Yeah, there is not a lot.
Yeah,
but there is some.
Yeah. There's certainly a ton already in Hogwarts. There's a fair amount of modding there, but and some in Valheim too. There's some really excellent mods for Valheim. Mm. I haven't used many of them, but
we thought we were going to get Easter off on the podcast, but looks like Baker and I are going to have to jump in and do an episode.
Yeah, good.
Because there's just so much going on with this new update, and you know, then we're also waiting to see if there's going to be another expedition associated with it, which usually when they add new content like this, they do an expedition that kind of introduces you to all the new stuff.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
Is that and like then, a quest line kind of thing?
Yeah, yeah. It's just a little, you know. You have milestones, you do these little things, you know, kind of like quests, you know, to get rewards at the end. And they're usually, you know, like companions and, you know, sometimes it'll be, you know, a couple of times it's been frigate ships, you know, that are special to the, completing the expedition. You know, sometimes it's just, you know, posters to hang on your wall. But one of the coolest things that they added on this one is, so there's always been this thing where, you know, when you get in a fight with the Sentinels in space, you know, first off, it starts off with one ship against you. You kill that, then it's two, then they send three. For when they get to five and you kill those, then they send in a dreadnought, which is a big freighter, you know, that has a swarm of ships come out of it, plus its guns. And, you know, you've been able to, you know, wipe out the guns and wipe out all the ships, and then, you know, it just stops spawning in. But now they've added an animation where if you you can destroy it. And when you do, there's this huge rippling explosion that runs down the length of the ship, and then it bursts into a fireball, which is really freaking awesome.
Yeah, that's a nice reward.
Yeah.
Where are you guys at on Fallout feed?
We're threatening to do another roundtable.
Oh boy, threatening again.
But we're, you know, we haven't jumped in all together. It looks like we're going to do a survival roundtable.
Survival, okay. On four, yeah. I assume, yeah.
Yeah, we're just trying to figure out what we're going to do in survival.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to make it interesting.
That's it. To make it in.
what are we all planning to do for when Starfield comes out? What's the general?
Good question.
Yeah. Only play Starfield?
Probably. Yeah.
Well, duh, but I mean, you know, yeah. Are we going to do an immediate blind round table or
oh, that would be a good idea.
Or what?
I just turned off my mic. Yeah, that would be a good idea. yeah, I don't know. I mean, we had talked about starting a show. I don't know. I have no idea. But I'll definitely be playing it a lot, so we can probably talk about it wherever.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. All right. Cool.
I have to upgrade my Xbox too for that.
I've been thinking about upgrading my gaming PC. We'll see. I assume Starfield will come native on the Steam Deck.
I would assume so at this point, yeah.
And a major plug for the Steam Deck. That's, I mean, I have had issues playing Hogwarts on the PC. Anybody who's played it on the PC knows that it's kind of a little bit janky. It has a lot of lag issues and things like that. It is smooth as butter on the Steam Deck, and cool. I believe it also on consoles as well.
Hmm.
And Valheim runs really nicely on the Steam Deck.
Oh, really? I had a friend who had an issue getting it to work on there. Yeah.
Oh, okay. I had pretty good experience with that.
Huh. I forget. It was just the other day he was trying to load it on and he had an issue, actually.
Oh, okay. Maybe there's something new going on.
Yeah, I don't know. Because I thought I remembered you saying that you were playing it on the Steam Deck and had no issues. So
yeah, and at the time I thought it was also available on Xbox, and it wasn't at that time, but now it is.
Yeah. I'll have to look back and see what he had said. I forget. It was last week or maybe two weeks ago, something like that. Mm-hmm. It was right after it had come out on Game Pass, because he was going to try and start playing at the same time as well. So, but he had some kind of issues with loading it on or getting it to work cleanly on the Steam Deck, and apparently it was a known thing, but there was some kind of workaround, so maybe it was just something like that where he didn't follow the workaround.
I don't know if I mentioned this the last time, and I haven't tried it if I did, but there's also a way to load mods onto the Steam Deck.
Oh yeah, you were saying that. Yeah.
Okay. I thought I had, but
oh, that's nice.
But it requires getting down into the weeds. With it, opening up the whatever the back end, I believe it's Linux, and loading a bunch of stuff in. Just more work than I want to do. So
yeah, hopefully next time we can line up with Juan, because he's been playing on the Steam Deck as well, I believe. We moved this recording like three times, so
yeah, sorry about that. Yeah.
It was like every 5 minutes. It's like.
It ended up working out because the update dropped yesterday.
Oh, so there you go.
I haven't been doing much else. If it wasn't going to be Tuesday, today is a much better chance.
Oh man,
hey, you got a new chair there, don't you? I just noticed that.
It's a recycled from downstairs.
Oh, okay. That's it.
It's an old office chair.
Oh, nice.
it's much more cushy.
Yeah, so we had Steve's feedback. Next time, actually, we have a few more from him, so next time we'll be getting into those as well. This was kind of his big one because it was setting up the character. Also, anybody else who likes doing those, definitely feel free. I know in the past, we had Dave with the McBeta stories and related relatives of McBeta and other people in the past. So, I mean, it's been a long time, so there's been other people as well. you can always email them to skyromanticpodcast@gmail.com. Don't forget, we obviously have Butcher Baker Candlestick Maker in Space with lots of A's in space.
At @BBCISSS.
There you go.
On Twitter.
That's easier. Fallout Feed, Dames for Game, this show. the shows that came from this show, such as 10AD has its own feed. Skyrim 10AD has its own feed. That show is complete. So if you want to listen to the run of that, it's there.
That was so much fun.
Yeah.
Much missed. Yes.
I wanted to make sure that I had its own feed because it needed like to be in one place where people can find it. You know what I mean? So if you want to look up Skyrim 10AD, it's on all the podcatcher places. What's the other one we did? Oh, Let's Play Skyrim. The audio Let's Play. That has its own feed. I think everything is uploaded to it now.
Nice.
Unless I forgot something, and I'll double check that and somebody will tell me. Also, Let's Play Fallout also has its own feed. Which Pat did a ton of those. And some other people did them. But I know Pat did a bunch.
Oh, yeah. They were good.
Too. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's it. And Will Run For also related. If you like running, we talk about running. And other stupid stuff we do. So there's that. All right. All that can be found at asapodcasting.com. And as always, I don't usually do it. I always forget. Thank you to the patrons who support the show. Basically,
yes, thank you.
Our Patreon is set up just to pay for the feeds, essentially. So that's basically what we use it for. It's not like we don't have like tons of levels or anything. Like if you can kick in a buck or two a month, it just pays for the feeds. That's it. That's the gist of it. It's a very basic, simple, bare bones kind of thing going on there. It's just paying Buzzsprout. We're just a middleman to pay Buzzsprout, so which we haven't had an issue with. So I kind of like.
Yeah, it's been solid.
It's been very solid. So after the disastrous crash, whatever it was, 4 or 5 years ago of Talk Shoe, where we almost lost everything, it's nice to have something very stable. So, thanks, everybody, for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.
Night, all.
Take care.